Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In the depths of the Depression, Franklin Roosevelt created a program to provide work for young men. And over a period of 9 years, they planted billions of trees, developed 800 new state parks. They built over 46,000 bridges. They also helped lay the foundation for the American environmental movement. This morning, we'll be talking a little bit about the history of one of the most popular programs of the New Deal, the Civilian Conservation Corps, often referred to by its initials, the CCC. And our guest for the program this morning is an historian. His name is Neil Marr. He's an associate professor in the Federated History Department of NJIT, that's the New Jersey Science and Technology University, and Rutgers University, Newark. And he is the author of a book that was just published this year. The title of his book is Nature's New Deal, The Civilian Conservation Corps and the Roots of the American Environmental Movement. It was published by the Oxford University Press. So certainly if you're interested, you can go out and take a look at the book. And as we talk this morning, questions are welcome, as always. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's for local listeners. We do also have a toll-free line, and that means if you would be listening over the air around Illinois and Indiana, and it would be a long-distance call, or for that matter, anybody listening on the internet across the country may also use the toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point, questions are welcome. We just ask callers to be brief so we can keep moving along, but certainly your questions and comments are welcome. Professor Marr, hello.
Yeah, hi.
Thanks for talking with us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This is something, you know, I guess we started thinking about this because of now there are people who are saying that given that we need to do something to stimulate the economy, given the fact that we have various very serious needs for infrastructure renovation here in this country, that maybe something like this might not be a bad idea, and that maybe there might be some lessons that we could draw from looking at the experience of the CCC.
I think that's a really good point. There are a couple of countries that are actually trying to sort of recreate the CCC. Is that something that you might want to hear about?
Well, at some point, I think so. Maybe maybe just save that.
Sure.
Although I suppose it is also is worth mentioning that even now today here in the United States, there are programs that certainly sound like it. There are various states where they have programs like this. So certainly the concept of the CCC still lives.
Absolutely.
Here in this country.
Yep, absolutely. We're not online. We're not on. Are we on right now?
Oh, yeah. Yes, be careful what you say. We're on right now.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, there are numerous states out there that have CCCs. There's a really strong CCC program in California. States throughout the country have them. And then there are things like Job Corps that also try to take the CCC idea and put young people to work. But those national programs tend to focus less on the sort of conservation aspects of it and more on educating these young people. But there are some countries out there like Kenya and China that have created CCC-like programs. Afghanistan has its own Afghan Conservation Corps. And Brazil is doing some really interesting things right now with trying to recreate a conservation corps, but in a way that's it's very modern. They're basically taking unemployed people, putting them to work planting trees. They're trying to plant a billion trees in their Brazilian Atlantic forest. And instead of paying for that program primarily through taxes like we did or federal funding like we did during the Great Depression, Brazil is going to gain carbon vouchers on the international carbon market by planting those trees and then use those vouchers to fund the program. So there's very much of a need and to bring the CCC back in a way that's, I think, novel and modern and focuses on these issues that are very important right now, like global warming.
Well, let me ask you this as a basic question about the CCC when it was created. Was the primary goal here to accomplish the work, that is to do these things we've talked about, building roads and bridges and creating parks and planting trees, mm-hmm. or was it thought of more as a program designed to provide work for young men who were coming from families that were devastated because of the Depression?
It's a great question, and you know, the first chapter of my book really discusses exactly the question you're asking, which is how did these two ideas sort of come together? So you have the one idea of conserving natural resources, and then you have a second idea of, in a sense, conserving human resources, these young men and their families, and trying to help alleviate a lot of the problems that they're going through, the economic problems they're going through during the Great Depression. And what Franklin Roosevelt does is that he relies on two experiences that he has, one with the conservation movement in New York when he's a state senator and a governor, and the second experience he has with his involvement with the Boy Scouts in the greater New York City area. So he's very involved with the conservation movement. On the one hand, he's working on state conservation issues. He's very much involved in helping protect forests up in the Adirondack Forest Preserve in upstate New York. He's on a number of fish and game and wildlife commissions when he's a state senator, and when he becomes governor, he initiates a lot of conservation programs. So he has this really keen interest in conserving natural resources, very much similar to Teddy Roosevelt, his cousin. Many people don't realize that Franklin Roosevelt was very, very interested and active in conservation and the conservation movement. The interesting part, and what I found sort of surprising, was that he was also amazingly active in the Boy Scout movement. He helped sort of solidify the Boy Scout movement in the greater New York City area. He combined a lot of the Boy Scout organizations and made them into a unified system. And it was that experience with the Boy Scouts that made him concerned about these young men, these young boys that were often in cities. How could we get them out of the cities into the countryside and help them sort of realize through experiences in nature that nature mattered, but also how to get them healthier? And what Franklin Roosevelt does is he begins, when he's governor of New York, to create Boy Scout camps that will teach young boys conservation. And this is something very new in the Boy Scouts. So he's sort of bringing together his conservation interests and his interest in these young men in the Boy Scouts first, and that really plays a role in him later establishing emergency relief programs in New York that put people to work planting trees and fixing parks and building infrastructure in parks. And then that state program in turn becomes the germ or the root, the seed of the CCC on a national scale.
How many people, what was the total number of participants in the CCC?
There were over 3 million young men who enrolled in the program between 1933 and 1942. But it really affected a lot more people than that, because these young men, the money that they were making each day, they made a dollar a day, that money went home to their families. $25 of that $30 a month went home to their families. So the young men were being influenced by this program, but so were the families that these young men belonged to, as were the local communities nearby.
And certainly, I'm sure that there are many, many stories about how some of the young men that went into this program literally came almost with nothing. That they barely had clothes, they hadn't been eating very well, and for them, not only was it an opportunity for them to do something productive, but they got fed and they got clothed a dollar or two maybe went into their pockets, and then most of the rest of the money went to their families. So there were a variety of benefits for the individuals and their families that participated.
Absolutely, and I write a little bit about this, and I write a lot about the young men and how they're transformed by this experience. But I do mention Illinois in one part of the book, and I thought maybe I would just read a very short excerpt from the book that sort of discusses exactly what you just said, how
Sure.
they came in sort of undernourished and sort of unhealthy, and how they leave very differently.
Mm-hmm.
This is just from the book, and I write here that the majority of core enrollees were in poor physical condition prior to joining the New Deal program. By their own accounts, expressed over and over again throughout the 1930s, enrollees were aware of their physical deterioration during the Great Depression. While frequently using terms such as scrawny, weak, and poorly developed to describe their physiques before joining the Corps, the young men enrolling in the CCC were not merely underweight, but they felt unhealthy as well. As an enrollee stationed near Rushville, Illinois, said, he could have been describing the experiences of many young men joining the CCC when he wrote in 1934 that, quote, upon enrollment, I was almost a physical wreck. Now, the Corps is very much aware that these young men are coming into the program extremely unhealthy, having not had a lot to eat at their home and in their homes, and not being able to work and keep their bodies healthy that way. And for the CCC, the most important curative for these sickly bodies flooding into the core was work in nature. According to the core, only hard manual labor outdoors could reverse the physical deterioration caused by the unemployment and unhealthy environments of the Great Depression. And the core really promoted this outdoor labor at almost every step. And there was a camp advisor in Illinois who was in charge of a camp in Illinois, 200 men in his camp. And he described this transformation that these young men experienced after they worked in the core. He wrote to his CCC superior in 1934 that, quote, "Every boy is sturdier and stronger and walks straighter than he did before entering camp." So these young men in Illinois being transformed through this outdoor labor, just like the 3 million men across the country were being transformed as well.
Let me just very quickly introduce our guest, reintroduce our guest, if you might have just joined us. Neil Marr is associate professor in the Federated History Department of NJIT, that's the New Jersey Science and Technology University, NJIT, Rutgers University, Newark. And we are talking here about the history of the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC. He's written a book about this. His book is titled Nature's New Deal. The subtitle is The Civilian Conservation Corps and the Roots of the American Environmental Movement. It was published this year by the Oxford University Press. Questions welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. You know, one of the things that I'd like to have you talk about, and certainly it's one of the differences between this time and that, has to do with the difference between what we mean now when we use a word like environmentalism and what people then meant when they used a term like conservation, because it reflects a rather different kind of mindset, perhaps a different kind of idea of the relationship between human beings and nature. And you seem to be making the argument that, in fact, the CCC helped to play some kind of a role in the movement from one to the other.
Right. That's a great question. And conservation and environmentalism are very different things, although they are quite related. Conservation was a movement back in the progressive era at the turn of the century in the 1910s. And it involved people who were really concerned about our wasteful use of natural resources. So people who were concerned that we were cutting down too many forests, people who were concerned that farmers were not taking care of the soil, people who were concerned with us using water in an inefficient way. These people were part of this thing called the conservation movement. And in general, these people were elite people. They were professional foresters. They were high-level government officials like Teddy Roosevelt. They were trained hydrologists, sort of scientists, and these people were very concerned about natural resources. Now, environmentalism is something very different. We see environmentalism as having, you know, come forth or arisen in the 1960s with things like Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, the Santa Barbara oil spill, Earth Day in 1970, and environmentalism has to do with natural resources and conserving them wisely, but it's also a bigger idea, and it's bigger because it involves the human element, sort of a more human-centered movement. Things like wilderness preservation, you know, us being able to preserve wilderness and go out and recreate in it. Things like health through outdoor recreation, and of course ecology is a major ingredient to this thing that we call environmentalism, along with things like pollution, and that pollution and ecology sort of go together. So environmentalism is a much bigger, broader thing. And secondly, environmentalism was not only a movement of elites. Environmentalism was a movement of middle-class people and sort of a more grassroots movement, sort of more from the bottom up than conservation was. And what happens during the 30s is that Franklin Roosevelt begins with the conservation idea, let's plant a lot of trees and stop soil erosion. But because there's this human element, all those young men who are going in there and being rejuvenated through this work, and because they're creating things like parks that are going to help to rejuvenate the American public through outdoor recreation, this more human-centered element comes into what had been just a focus on natural resources. Also, there's a huge debate during the late 1930s about what the CCC is doing. A lot of people get very upset that the CCC is for instance, building roads through national parks and destroying wilderness areas, and secondly, doing things like planting trees in certain ways that are ecologically unsound, you know, planting the wrong type of tree in a certain area. And you have people that begin to debate, is what the CCC doing really conservation, or are they doing something that is upsetting the natural balance of nature? And that debate sparks a sort of public dialogue over what is this thing we're calling conservation? And I argue that it's through that public debate that this idea of conservation becomes expanded and broadened and enlarged into what we now think of as environmentalism.
Well, who was it that was responsible for deciding what sort of projects the CCC would do?
In the beginning, it was pretty much Franklin Roosevelt. This was his pet project. He loved this project. When I was looking through the archives up in Hyde Park, which is where his archive and library are, many of the documents I looked through had notes by Franklin Roosevelt on them, sort of giving advice on what types of work to do. The other reason Franklin Roosevelt was very involved is because he used the CCC in particular and conservation in general as a political tool to foster a liberal New Deal coalition that helped him sort of forge the modern welfare state. So Franklin Roosevelt, for instance, handpicked where these camps would go. He was incredibly involved in deciding where the camps would be because he knew, for instance, that he needed the South. He needed the South's support during the New Deal. So he put a lot of camps in the South to help fight soil erosion. He also knew he needed the Great Plains states, and when the Dust Bowl hit, he sent a lot of camps out there to try to help the farmers out there, but also to help his own political career in the Great Plains. And you remember, in 1936, he ran against Alf Landon in Kansas, and he beat Alf Landon in Kansas partly because of his promotion of things like the Corps. So he's very much involved in deciding what types of work are being done, both for conservation reasons, but also for political reasons.
Well, again, for people who are listening, questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We're talking about the history of the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC, and questions are certainly welcome at any point here. Our guest, Neil Maher, he's an associate professor in the Federated History Department, NJIT, Rutgers University, Newark, and has written a book entitled Nature's New Deal. Looks at some of the history of the CCC. Well, I'm interested in maybe anything more that had to do with perhaps controversy, because on the one hand, I think people look back on the CCC in a very positive sort of way, and everything that I read that I have read says that it was, if not the most popular New Deal program, certainly was among the most popular programs of the New Deal. But in what other ways was the CCC controversial, particularly in the initial stages where they were talking about what they were going to do and getting it up and running?
Sure. Some people were upset for the reasons that I just gave, which is that Franklin Roosevelt was, in a sense, using this for political gain. Mm-hmm. So there were some people in Congress, especially during the later years of the New Deal, when he was being accused of, poor governance with respect to the court packing plan and these sorts of things. He was being accused of using the CCC in this way, this political way as well. But on a local level, it was interesting how it sort of played out, because in the beginning, many local communities that had a CCC camp stationed nearby were very upset. They did not want these young men who they saw as, mostly urban youths coming into these rural areas. They were very upset that these young men were coming into these areas, and they were fearful that they would, abscond with their daughters and cause havoc in the local towns. But as they began to experience the camps nearby, and as the young men would come into town and spend a little bit of that money that they got each month, these young men got $5 a month, they would spend that in nearby towns, and they behaved pretty well. And economically, these towns really gained a lot from having a camp nearby. Not only did the young men spend their extra cash in town, but these camps, on average, spent about $5,000 a month on local goods and services in the nearby town. So all of a sudden, you had these people who were very wary of the CCC becoming quite enamored of it for economic reasons, and they actually ended up fighting for to keep these camps where they were when they were going to be moved, as they moved around the country to do different types of work. There was also a lot of concern over African-American camps. The CCC was a segregated organization, as most were, most institutions were during the 1930s. And people were very upset if an African-American camp moved in. And it's interesting to note that people in the North were usually more upset if an African-American camp moved in nearby than in the South, because I think the South just had a much longer history of living near African-Americans. Mm. So that controversy was interesting in how it sort of played out.
And there also was a separate, under the same umbrella organization, but a division, a Native American division of Indians and Indian camps. And I guess most of the work that they did done on Indian reservations?
It was. It was mostly out west. And the men working in the Indian camps did not live in camps that were separate from their reservations. They actually went home each night, and they would come during the day and do their work and then go home at night. So it was a little bit different, and it was run under the Bureau of Indian Affairs mm-hmm. instead of the Corps.
The camps were, I don't know if it's correct to say quasi-military, they at least had sort of a military flavor the guys lived in barracks, and somebody, I guess, probably blew a bugle in the morning, so everybody got up, and everybody kind of had a uniform. They gave them the clothes to wear, and that it was run along those lines, and if somebody wanted to leave, they could, but that also would be something of an embarrassment, because it would be kind of like a dishonorable discharge.
Right.
That's the way that it was sort of considered. How did people have any concerns about this and have it being run kind of along those lines?
Absolutely. This controversy you were talking about earlier is directly related to this question, because in the beginning, many people on the left were very concerned that the CCC was going to become a program that would militarize the American youth. And this concern was quite appropriate in a sense, because the CCC was run by four different already existing departments. The War Department at that point, the Department of Labor, which chose the young men, the Department of Interior, and the Department of Agriculture, which undertook the conservation work. But it's the Department of War that ran the camps. So when the young men were in their camps, the Department of War, the War Department sort of oversaw, the young men in the barracks and how they would feed them and sort of clothe them and keeping morale and keeping things in order. So there were people on the left who were very upset about the War Department sort of militarizing youth. And so what Franklin Roosevelt did is he had to institute a number of rules. For instance, there was no military drill. They weren't allowed to march. There was reveille and there were calisthenics, but they really tried to control the Army's involvement. Once the young men left the camp and went out into the field to do their work, the Army remained behind, and the young men were then under the supervision of either foresters with the Department of Agriculture or Park Service personnel with the Department of the Interior. It's interesting, though, that later on in the late 1930s and early 1940s, as World War II sort of begins to become an issue, Roosevelt attempts to save the CCC, because Congress is trying to eliminate it through budget cuts. He tries to save it by giving it jobs, conservation jobs that would involve military issues. There's a concern that the Japanese might attack the Pacific Northwest and burn some of the forests out there, and Roosevelt argues that the Corps could actually help put out those fires if they started. And then it turns out that over 75% of the young men in the Corps in the early 1940s actually transition into the Army. So there's a very strong relation between the two programs, and that concern early back in the early 30s about the War Department militarizing American youth, in a sense, that's what happens in the late 30s and early 40s. A lot of these young men go into the military.
Well, that was an interesting question, and one that I certainly was thinking about, the way in which this, if that was not the intention, that was the way that this functioned.
Right.
Because eventually, after 9 years, I think the perception was that the need for this program wasn't quite as great. And then as you go into the war, then what you got to have is you got to have these guys and everybody who was able going into the military. And probably that also meant that here you had 3 million guys who were somewhat used to the idea of that kind of living that way, who were in much better physical condition than they were.
Exactly.
And so that actually worked out. If that was not the idea, that actually worked out quite well.
And I think that's important to note that, number one, it wasn't a conscious goal of Franklin Roosevelt or the CCC to militarize these young men. It just sort of happened because of the historic moment. But these young men were perfectly ready to go into the military. They had lived in barracks. They had lived with in camps with all other young men. They were used to the discipline. They understood sort of the hierarchy of the military. And a lot of them went right into sort of officer positions or positions higher up in the military than they would have if they hadn't been in the CCC.
The Congress, it's my understanding that they didn't formally close it down. What they did was they just defunded it. They zeroed out the budget. Was it ever actually, in an official kind of way, disbanded?
No. Everything that I've read and researched just says exactly what you said, is they just basically stopped providing funding for it. And there were numerous attempts over the years to recreate a Civilian Conservation Corps in the 50s and the 70s and over again, but it went to the state level, and then you had these other incarnations of it. But, yeah, that's what happened in Congress. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the war just became too much of an issue, and the Corps was sort of seen as less important to that problem.
Yeah. We are a little bit past our midpoint here. Our guest is Neil Maher. He is associate professor in the Federated History Department, NJIT, Rutgers, Newark, and he is the author of the book Nature's New Deal. This is published by the Oxford University Press, just came out this year. The subtitle is The Civilian Conservation Corps and the Roots of the American Environmental Movement. And that's what we're talking about here this morning, something about the history of the CCC and what it meant for environmentalism in this country. Questions are welcome. We have a caller who's ready to go to talk with us, and others are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We have someone to talk with, and they are in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Mm-hmm.
One of my reactions is that in terms of, it was great in terms of the environmental movement and all that, but, you know, as Americans, we tend to forget that important component, conservation. So I don't know what your reaction to that is. That, you know, we're a society that's still very wasteful, and had we been more conservative in a lot of these issues, we certainly wouldn't have been, you know, in the situation we are now. So I know this is more of a broader thing than, you know, focusing on the development of this conservation core. But do you have any comments there?
Do you mean how we've sort of forgotten to be conservationist, in a sense, today, that we're sort of, waste a lot of things? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, in terms of conserving. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I think it's a great point. I mean, during the 1930s, people were all conservationists because they had to get by. So people were, you know, they were canning fruit, and they were trying to, take their old clothing and turn them into rags to use for other purposes. People were scavenging in cities to try to find pieces of metal that they could then resell, right? So in times of economic crisis, people are forced to be sort of conservationists. And I think what Franklin Roosevelt was doing was trying to do that on a larger scale. I mean, he was really worried that because of all the sort of uncontrolled industrial growth of the 1920s and even earlier, that we had become very wasteful, just like Teddy Roosevelt was very concerned about that during the Progressive Era. And the idea was that Franklin Roosevelt was trying to, show people in the United States that we needed to conserve things on a grand level. But I think people during the Great Depression sort of got that on their own. Now, today I think we might be heading towards a similar situation. I mean, I'm reading today that, the sales in for the Christmas season are coming up, and people aren't going to spend, and people are completely, worried about the economy, and sort of maybe they'll have to start conserving again. I mean, I think that the change in the presidency perhaps suggests a new change in thinking about these sorts of things. I mean, we have just been, consuming and consuming and consuming, and maybe now we'll have to try to conserve and conserve and conserve.
But, again, the great program is amazing in terms of the timing of the book, how it,
I know. It's been really interesting because I've gotten more calls about the book, too. There are people who are saying, we need a CCC, but we need it in a new way. And I try to respond with that story about Brazil and how there's a new way to do this. We don't have to go back to the New Deal. I don't think we can go back to the New Deal. I am a full-on supporter of Franklin Roosevelt. He's one of my heroes, and the New Deal and his programs were I think, incredibly important. I don't think our country would go for it right now, right? People were calling Barack Obama a socialist. Well, they would never go for what Franklin Roosevelt was trying to do, right? We couldn't do that again. But we can do them in a new way, and that new way, I think, involves the market. And that's what Brazil's trying to do. They're trying to plant trees, but do that within a market system that'll help pay for that program. So there's a very new way to revitalize and renew the New Deal, I think. And that's the important thing.
Excellent program.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. We'll go on to Broadlands. This is another caller. And line two. Hello.
Hello. This is a wonderful program. And, Neil, thank you for being on the program. But my question comes from a little bit of what you were just talking about, and that is the paying for the program. How was it paid for back in the 30s? And was it bond paid for, or was it just printing of money?
From what I've read, it was just printing money. But we have to remember how that money was printed and how that money was spent. And I think it's important to sort of lay that out, because if you just think of it as us printing money to fund a program, it seems like that money goes into a black hole, which is really not the case. As I said, you know, each of these young men, the 3 million young men who were in this program, got $1 a day for their work. So that's $30 a month. 25 of that dollars went home to their family. So their family was able to, you know, get through the Great Depression, many of these families, because of that $25. So that money is going not just to the young men, but to their families as well. In the local communities, those local communities were receiving some of that extra $5 pocket money that those young men had, because every weekend they'd go into town, they'd go to the movies, they'd go to a pool hall, they'd go to a local bar, maybe they'd go to a dance, and they'd spend that money in town. But also these camps, each of these camps, there were 5,000 camps all over the country, would be spending about $5,000 each month, which comes to, you know, over the Great Depression era, millions of dollars flowing into these local communities. And it's interesting that that local businessmen in these local communities near CCC camps became some of the most fervent supporters of the Corps. Businessmen who had voted Republican, right? Because they realized that this money was helping to keep their communities afloat and keep their businesses afloat. So the money was really used over and over again. It didn't just go into a program to help pay for seedlings that were being planted in national forests, right? It went to the people.
Sure. And I think it's important. And it created jobs. The question today in the U.S., there's so many people, though, that feel they don't need jobs or wouldn't take those jobs to pay, well,
right,
definitely not a dollar a week, but not even $100 a week, because their unemployment or whatever is so much higher. How do we, how would we in this, or how is Brazil doing that to find people? I assume Brazil doesn't have the same social programs that we do here that basically take care of people no matter whether they work or not work. And we live in America, and that's a great thing that we can support that.
Right.
But I'll let you go and listen on the radio. Thank you very much, Neil.
Thank you. Well, I think that for us to sort of encourage people to think about a program like this, or maybe even join a program like this, maybe we'd have to do it not by just paying them, but by, you know, helping them with college education, for instance. Like these young people who went into the Corps, you know, back in the 30s, you know, for them, that money helped them perhaps, you know, help their family, or they moved into the military and that got them into their education through the GI Bill. But, you know, for instance, now there are a lot of young people who leave high school who don't know what they want to do, and they don't really have direction, or didn't work hard enough, or didn't have the support to go right to college. So maybe if we took those young people and move them into a Corps like this, you could encourage them by saying, we'll help you with tuition later on. I was out in the Sierra Nevada mountains this summer camping for a week, and I ran into some students from this California Conservation Corps. And it was amazing for me to walk down a trail and see these young people who were doing the exact same things that the CCC had done in the 1930s. They were fixing trails for people to hike on. And I talked to them for a while, and they were all using the money that they were getting to go to college. And they didn't get that much, but they didn't spend anything when they were in the California Conservation Corps. They were up in the mountains for 6 months at a time. But when they came out, they got some funding for their college, but they also got tuition money that they were going to use to go back to school. I just think it's a great way to encourage people, not only through education, but also through service to their country. Right? I think that, you know, part of what we're seeing now is that people are asking, you know, John F. Kennedy, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. There are people who are talking about this now. I want to go to Washington and start doing something. Maybe now is the time to say, well, let's do something with nature. Let's do something in the national forests and in the national parks and try to help the country that way. And in the process, we'll help you get a college degree.
Just, I have a couple of callers here. I'll get right to them, but maybe just let me ask you the question. How much, for the 9 years that it was operating, what did the CCC cost?
You know what? I used to know that amount, and I don't anymore. And if I tried to guess, I think I would probably mess it up. But it was run fairly efficiently because the barracks were all built in the beginning. The barracks were built by the young men, so they didn't hire people to build these barracks. A lot of the food was cooked by the men, and it was bought locally. There were a lot of conservation measures when it came to the funding that was being used for it, and they also moved the barracks around, so they weren't tearing them down and building them up again. They were very aware that they had to keep the prices down if they wanted to keep the popularity of the Corps up.
Well, and I would assume that people would, and you and other people would make the argument that the work that was done, the things that were built, was at least equal in value to what it cost. And in fact, it might have been that we got more than we put
right
into it.
I mean, basically, every state park in the country, almost every state park in the country, the infrastructure in those parks was built by the Corps. All your national parks have some Corps infrastructure, whether it's hiking trails or visitor centers or comfort stations even. And these things are still there. I mean, like everyone I talk to who's, oh, yeah, I visited a park and there was a CCC comfort station or a picnic shelter that we had lunch under, and it was just so beautiful and rustic and the stonework and the woodwork, and it's still there, and it made me so proud to be an American. And I'm like, that's a pretty good payoff investment.
Okay.
In my opinion.
We have about 10 minutes left, maybe a little bit more than 10 minutes. And again, our guest is Neil Maher. He is Associate Professor in the Federated History Department of NJIT, the New Jersey Science and Tech University, NJIT Rutgers, Newark. And he is the author of a book that looks at some of the history of the CCC. The title of his book is Nature's New Deal, The Civilian Conservation Corps and the Roots of the American Environmental Movement. And it's published by the Oxford University Press, came out this year. We have some other callers here. We'll talk next with someone in Effingham. And this would be line 4, the toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. Thank you again. I'll give my sermonette again about these things. The CCC was a stopgap to take young people off the street and to thwart the revolutionary movement that was consolidating. The same thing is going to happen this time. Mr. Obama has absolutely no power to control the capitalists where all this stuff flows from. And on a final negative note, drive by your local National Guard station and look at the equipment, and these people are going to come back from Iraq and Afghanistan who will control the crowd by weaponry. Thank you.
Well, I don't know how you want to react to that. Were there people at the time who were actually saying that they were saying that that this was a government response to the fact that, you know, there were people who could, if not otherwise productively occupied, could cause trouble?
Yeah, I mean, there were people, there was a lot of concern about people who were so-called riding the rails, these sort of hobos that were riding a lot of the trains throughout the country. There's actually a great documentary called Riding the Rails that discusses this. And these young people had no place to go, and they were sort of, people were worried that they were going to cause, you know, increased juvenile delinquency. And there are some people out there who claim that the CCC was to, you know, sort of control those people and to take them off the streets and take them out of a sort of revolutionary mode and put them in these camps. And, you know, frankly, from what I've, every single piece of documentation I've looked at, that was never in Franklin Roosevelt's mind, you know. But it could have been in some of the administrators' mind, I'm not really sure. But what I think is important is that when I talk to the actual enrollees, the young men who were in the program, that is the farthest thing from their mind. They are not at all, you know, concerned that the Corps might detract from their radical politics. I mean, these people wanted a job and wanted food, and if anything, I found that it made these people more politically aware, and if anything, more liberal. I mean, these people supported the liberal welfare state that Franklin Roosevelt created during the 1930s. I mean, what this caller has brought up is a very important point, is that the New Deal has been seen as both a conservative force and a very, very liberal force. Conservative in that it defused some of the radical politics of the 30s because it worked within the capitalist system, right? So it didn't try to radically change things. It tried to sort of help people remain in the capitalist system. And that's a critique, and that's what your caller was sort of bringing up. You can see it that way, or you can see it that Franklin Roosevelt was pushing politics way to the left in a way that brought a lot of people with him. And I think for the past 60, 70 years, we've been moving more to the right. We've been rolling back the New Deal for 60 years, and maybe now it's time to rethink that. But the people who I talked to, the young men, did not feel that they were being controlled. And I like to believe them when I interview them and talk to them.
All right. We have other callers, and next we'll talk with someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. I'd like to take up a point you made. The businessman in Kansas who supported the works program, you, I think, assumed he was a conservative because he's a Republican. But the Republicans of that day, the Republican Party, was a liberal party, often a progressive party. And if you look at the Republican presidential candidates from 1900 to 1960, none were conservatives, and a majority were out-and-out liberals, some progressives, Rockefeller, Dewey, Roosevelt, Taft. Taft was Roosevelt's protege. These men were not conservatives. Even Hoover was not a conservative. He was an old-style liberal. So this Republican probably had some progressive roots. And that is, I think, is probably what we're seeing in some of the switches in this last election. The old heartland of the progressive Republican Party, the New England states and New York, is now solidly Democratic. Right. It's beginning to switch.
Now, I think that your caller makes a good point in that the parties back then were not as partisan as they are now. You know, Teddy Roosevelt was a Republican, but he was also a conservationist. And conservation was a Republican issue back in the early part of the century. This is what I find so surprising about the Republican Party today and all this talk about, you know, green energy and sort of dealing with climate change. I mean, this was a Republican issue 100 years ago. And it was a Republican issue that allowed Republicans to gain massive amounts of support nationwide. I don't understand why the Republicans now are not embracing this the way Teddy Roosevelt did. I do think, though, that the Republican Party of Teddy Roosevelt is very, very different than the Republican Party of John McCain. So I think that, you know, we have to remember the history here. A lot has changed from the early part of the century to today. But I agree with your caller. I think that there is... Conservation should be a bipartisan issue, and if anything, the Republicans should take it back because it's an important part of their history.
We have just about 5 minutes left. I want to go to talk with someone in the community of Belgium, not too far away from where we are. This is line two. Hello.
Hello, and good morning. I would like to point out that today, items that were produced not by the they were boys of the CCC, but they weren't. They were a little different. You go to many communities, especially in the West, but many communities around, you'll see artwork that was produced by the CCC, and every now and again it'll show up today. And Uncle Sam has not sold that artwork, and he comes after it very vigorously. They thought so much of it. Artwork off of buildings and stuff, libraries, various buildings, National Guard buildings and stuff. In San Francisco, there's Cloyte Tower and the Beach Chalet, both of which have beautiful murals inside of them that are valued by that community. So these people produce more than just trees and buildings. They produce some very fabulous art that is valued very highly even today.
That's a great point. And the cover of my book actually has a linoleum cut, sort of like a woodcut, that was produced by a CCC artist. Now, everyone sort of is familiar with the Federal Artist Project, which was another New Deal program that put unemployed artists to work creating those murals in public spaces, for instance, murals in post offices. But the CCC also had a number of artists that traveled around the country to record through art CCC daily life. And one of these artists did the woodcut that I then put on the cover of my book, and it shows these two young men with their shirts off planting a tree, and in the back is this large American flag sort of waving in the background. And I think that what that says, and the reason I used it for the book, is that it shows that there were two things that were changed because of the Corps during this period. It was changing the natural environment by the planting of the tree, but it was also changing American politics because, you know, you see that flag in the background. So I think that this artwork it's not just sort of a nice little aside that we should think about. It's also incredibly important to remember and important to look at for historic reasons and also important politically, right? So I think that's a really good point that your caller makes, is that the artwork from the Federal Artist Project and the artwork from the CCC is a very important legacy from this era as well. Thank you very
all
much.
Right. Well, thanks. And certainly then also there were other programs of the New Deal. There was the WPA and the PWA that also did sort of a similar kind of thing. So that they were these different parts of this big overall effort, and much of the work that all of these kinds of people did that were employed as artists and people who built buildings and people who did murals and people who planted trees and all of this. So much of this is still exists on the American landscape, whether people realize that's where it came from or not.
Absolutely. Our public landscape today is very much of it was constructed was constructed during the New Deal period. I mean, post offices, schools, all our national forests, all our state parks, all our national parks. I mean, the entire Tennessee Valley, you know, it's incredible how much of our public landscape today comes from that era.
Well, we're coming down to the point here where we have, 3-4 minutes left. And I guess I'm interested again, and you have talked about this throughout the hour, but coming back to this point that really got us started and even thinking about wanting to look back to the CCC, and that's talking about needs for infrastructure renovation, continued needs for environmental preservation. We got an economy here that's in trouble, so we have people who need jobs. And the idea that something like this, something that perhaps was inspired by this and yet organized differently, is something that could address all of those sorts of things.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to, I'm speaking to Illinois, I'd like to tell Barack Obama that if he wants someone to start up a new CCC, I'll take a sabbatical and go to Washington and do it for him. I think it would be a very easy thing to do. I think it could be run like the CCC was in some ways. In other words, it wouldn't have to create a lot of new infrastructure in Washington, D.C., right? People right now don't want to spend a lot of money creating new bureaucracy. Well, the CCC originally was created through the addition of zero new bureaucracy. It was created by already existing departments that worked together to create this program. The same thing could be done now. I also think that the way that Brazil is using the international market, the international carbon market, to help fund this program is a wonderful idea. Let's say if we created a new CCC and put these young, it would be young men and young women now, of course, right? Put them to work, building wind farms in the Great Plains where the Dust Bowl used to be, right? And then paying for that program by the electricity that's generated from those wind farms. I mean, what an amazing way to do it. I mean, it's not just going back to that old notion of the New Deal. It's taking the New Deal and almost making it a new New Deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And using the market to do that.
Well, and I think that the only objection I think some people would make, and I gather at the time of the CCC, people made this objection too, is that not only do we have this pool of labor, these young people that perhaps could use the jobs and could use the experience, but we also have people who already know how to do this.
Right.
We have people who have worked construction. People who are plumbers and people who are electricians and people who are various kinds of engineers and people, who have done that kind of work. that also need work. So we would not want to be somehow giving, bypassing those people who already have the skills.
Exactly.
and definitely need the work.
And the Corps did that as well. The Corps had hired what they called local experienced men, and they were often foresters or woodworkers or stonemasons who trained the young boys in their work. And the same thing could be done today. I mean, you could get those experienced people that you just talked about, the engineers, the electricians that knew how to do those things, and hire them as well to help train these people who don't have those skills to then go out and do these things, to go out and conserve resources, to go out and build windmill farms, to go out and construct solar panel fields, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think you're very right. It can't just be one type of person. We've got to try to open this up to a lot of different types of people with a lot of different types of skills and use that skill.
Our guest for this hour, Neil Marr, is the author of the book Nature's New Deal, The Civilian Conservation Corps and the Roots of the American Environmental Movement. It's published this year by the Oxford University Press. He is associate professor in the Federated History Department, NJIT, that's New Jersey Science and Tech University, NJIT Rutgers, Newark. Professor Marr, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been great.